Views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Welcome to another Monday night here on the Shadows Radio. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Kara.
And we made our cue that time. Yay.
Yay. I wasn't on mute. I didn't put myself on mute.
Oh, yay. It's always good when you're on the radio to make sure that people can hear you.
I know. I apparently, after all these years, I just can't figure that part out.
We're going to have to like break your mute button or something. I don't know. Anyway, Monday's my favorite night of the week because I get to spend it here with you.
And yay!
Not somewhere else doing something else I don't want to do. So that's always fun.
Well, that's good that we're doing something that we want to do.
This is good. That is true. I don't know.
It's very good. And we didn't get the snow they called for. Yay!
Yeah, someone forgot to hit the on switch on the snowpocalypse machine because I don't know about you, but it barely, I mean, we got maybe 2 inches, 3 inches.
I think maybe an inch, yeah, here. It's like nothing. Yay!
We got enough that I had to break out the shovel, but not enough that I actually, you know, put any effort into actual shoveling. I just, to get some fresh air at lunch, I went outside and shoveled the front walk and, you know, dealt with that. But just like I said, it was a minor inconvenience compared to some of the disaster we faced this year.
Yes, so I guess, yes, we can be very happy that we did not get the snowpocalypse that we were expecting.
We were promised, like, you know, destruction, and we got, like, nothing.
Those dang weather people. Ugh.
Although, if you watch the news, and there's a viral video going around of one of the local news guys who eventually, he was standing in front of a plow, and the plow was plowing snow, and it literally just, like, took him from behind, and yeah, so I guess he got what, I don't want to say he got what was coming to him, because I'm sure it hurt, but, I don't know.
That plow guy was probably in there like, I'm going to get you.
Yeah. This is what you get for predicting more snow. But anyway.
I digress.
Yeah. So our guest tonight comes to us from the other coast of the country where they don't have quite as much snow as we do right now. They appear to be warmer or something. I'm not sure. Or luckier.
Are they paid luckier, warmer, one of those.
They paid the right people. I don't know. They prayed to the right, you know, person.
I don't know.
We need to learn how to do these things.
Buried in snow.
I don't know if I've mentioned this here on the show, but one of my personal interests has always been what kind of drives paranormal in other cultures and other religions and other, you know, subtexts of culture, you know, ethnicity, things like that. What drives the paranormal in that field? So if I went up to somebody, you know, because we always talk about paranormal and it always tends to be a more Christian based, you know, kind of conversation, which is great, and then it always tends to swing towards demons because people are just that way. But I want to talk about other, like, there has to be other views and other takes and other things. And then this email comes across my inbox about a gentleman who wanted to speak with us about the Mormon view, I'm sorry, the Church of Latter-day Saints view of kind of, you know, the paranormal and the afterlife and things like that. And I thought this was fantastic. I couldn't pass this opportunity up. So I am absolutely honored to welcome Daniel Johnson to our show. Hi, Daniel. Daniel, how are you?
Doing okay. Although we're not quite so lucky here. Our rainfall and precipitation is quite low. So we're sort of facing drought conditions out here.
Oh, so I guess it is kind of, it's kind of six and one half dozen the other. Do you have too much or not enough?
Yeah, well, right now it's definitely not enough, but we've been getting some lately, so we're snowpack is low in the mountains and water is low in other places.
Maybe we can ship some of this to you.
I was just going to say that. What, is it possible we can get it out there? Come on.
I don't think snow travels well, but we can try.
Yeah, that would be great if we could do that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show tonight. We really appreciate it. I guess we should start with the basics. Is what is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? Like, can you give us kind of a history?
Certainly, yeah. And certainly, and also I appreciate your having me on as well. So it's nice to be able to talk to you and explain some things and hopefully clear up any misunderstandings. So what are we? Good question. We are a Christian church. We would say so because we believe and worship in Jesus Christ. Some people might have some doubts or questions about that, so that's one thing I'd like to clear up. And what might make us a bit different from other Christian faiths is that we don't fall into the sort of Orthodox Protestant view of things. We don't believe that we are a sort of part of that history. We believe that the religion that Jesus and his apostles founded anciently was eventually lost from the earth and had to be restored in a divine manner. And then that brings us to the individual that you might have heard of called Joseph Smith. So we believe that he was a modern-day prophet that restored these things and also restored ancient scripture. One of them is the Book of Mormon, which is why people call us Mormons. So we do have the Bible, Old and New Testaments, but we have additional scriptures as well. And one of those is, of course, the Book of Mormon, which we believe is a record of God's dealings with people that were on the American continent.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about God's deal, is it kind of in a timeline with the other books of the Bible, or is this kind of on its own?
Oh, the timeline of the Book of Mormon?
Yes. Like, does it kind of fit in, like, obviously the Old Testament and the New Testament, they tend to follow one another. Would this one fit in with those?
There is a gap of quite a few centuries between the end of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament. But for us, the Book of Mormon begins around 600 B.C. with a prophet who actually lived in the land, in the city of Jerusalem, and was commanded to take his family and followers and leave. This is shortly before the destruction of Jerusalem. And he was led by God to a promised land, which we believe was eventually found on the Western Hemisphere or the American continents. And so it starts around 600 B.C. and then goes through quite a bit of history as far as the timeline goes, ends up somewhere probably around 400 A.D. So it spans probably almost 1,000 years, the main part of its history.
Wow, that's quite an extensive history. And unfortunately, for people who are not familiar with the church, we don't tend to look at it that way. We tend to have heard that it's a more recent church, I guess. I mean,
Recent in the fact that Joseph Smith was a person who lived in the 1800s, and so the church was officially established in 1830. So our belief is that it wasn't a new church, but a restoration of the original ancient church. And then, of course, he translated the Book of Mormon. Now, if you don't really follow along with our beliefs, then you wouldn't believe the Book of Mormon is an ancient scripture or ancient record. You'd probably find some sort of modern explanation for it. But our belief is that it was given to him on ancient records that he translated, and that was one of his main jobs to bring forth. So for us, it is an ancient book of scripture comparable to the Bible, and certainly covers some of those time periods as well.
That's great, because like I said, unfortunately, there is that misconception out there that this book is a more recent book, and it's great to hear that it's not really kind of that level. It gives it, not that it needed more credence, but do you know what I'm saying? Like, it gives it more
basis. Yeah, well, I think ideally it's a matter of faith as far as if you accept it as a recent, if you believe it's a recent invention, or if you think it actually is an ancient scriptural record written by prophets of God. It comes down to a matter of faith. But there are a number of sort of historical and archaeological issues along with that. Those are things that I've actually looked into and studied and written books about and done a number of trips down to ancient Mayan sites in Mesoamerica to kind of look at that region, study that region.
Yeah, I did see on your website that you do a lot of research into that kind of the Mexico area to look into those things. So what are you looking for down there?
Well, what am I looking for? Part of it is just I love the culture. I love the people of the area. and I love the ancient history. And so LDS scholars have kind of pinpointed that area as called Mesoamerica, southern Mexico, Guatemala, that as being the likely area where the Book of Mormon events took place once the people reached their new promised land and things that happened here. And so, you know, there are a number of archaeological questions that this raises. The Book of Mormon mentions things that, you know, did that really happen there? The idea of who, you know, ancient settlers were in the Americas is kind of an interesting issue these days. The issue of ancient Israelite DNA among Native Americans is one that comes up from time to time. And so, for my part, a lot has been just research into history and archaeology of those sites and seeing what types of things parallel accounts that are in the Book of Mormon.
That's amazing. And I see from your site that you've found quite a bit in terms of weaponry and glyphs and things like that. Is there anything that's really been kind of knocked your socks off and gone, wow, that's amazing?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that this is just kind of as a hobby of mine. I mean, there are people who actually are, you know, PhDs and archaeologists and doctorates and you know, who do this type of stuff, you know, professionally, and that's their thing. So I'm kind of piggybacking on much of their stuff. But also, I like to kind of bring it down to, you know, the level of the common person like me, and there's a lot of cool archaeological stuff going on that not many people know about. So perhaps one of the more interesting things is there are a number of things that the critics of the Book of Mormon point out to as being anachronistic. And one is a mention of horses. Of course, everyone knows there were no horses in the Americas before, you know, the Spanish arrived. But I've found a number of examples of horse remains that were found in the Mexico area, even on up to the United States as well, but things that are definitely pre-Columbian, but also seem to fall much later than kind of the last ice age, you know, when all the large animals died off in the American hemisphere. So the idea that there are horse remains from this area that are fit in the area where, you know, it's they're not supposed to be there, according to what, you know, common knowledge would say, but those things are coming up, and I think that is pretty neat.
That is definitely, I don't want to say that it's a hobby of mine, archaeology, but it's definitely an interest and a passion of mine, and I gobble up those books like crazy, especially when you find something that is kind of anachronistic, where it pulls in, it's like, hey, it doesn't quite fit with what we know about this area, but try it from this angle and suddenly it makes sense. I love that kind of stuff. So has there been anything that, you know, either yourself or one of the scholars has found there that kind of reshaped something about the book and the way that you guys look at kind of the history of the Book of Mormon?
Yeah, I think perhaps one of the major things that happened was, of course, when it came out, it was first published in 1830, and no one really knew anything about this region. No one really even knew anything about the ancient Maya or Toltec or any of those people, or that there even were cities down there. And so it kind of came out in 1830. It was sort of a vacuum of any type of archaeological research that has happened down there. So I think that Mormons looked at the Book of Mormon in a certain way and perhaps imagined it as kind of pertaining to all of ancient America and all the peoples, you know, from north to south, that was kind of their story. But I think a closer examination of it, and especially correlating it with modern archaeology, which has certainly given us a lot of advances there, shows us that more than likely the Book of Mormon talks about only a very small group of people in a very small, isolated area. And there could be many people, you know, from the Inuit up in Alaska and Canada, down to people down to Tierra del Fuego in South America, that are native peoples of this land, but aren't really directly connected to the Book of Mormon. So it's kind of sort of sharpened our focus to a specific area and specific times, and I think, you know, helped us perhaps see it in a way that would be a bit more accurate. So that might be a big thing that you know, modern scholarship and modern archaeology has helped us to kind of understand it a bit better.
Excellent. I did have a listener question come in, and they wanted you to clarify something that they had heard about the church, and it kind of goes a little bit along with the Book of Mormon, is that they heard that the modern day Book of Mormon has been edited from the original. Is that true or is that a rumor?
It's not a rumor, certainly. The book was first published in 1830 under the direction of Joseph Smith, and even during his lifetime he would make modifications. So a lot of those would be grammatical corrections or misspellings or something where the first manuscript that he did, when it got put into print, there something got a little bit changed or lost, or he felt that it could be said a little bit better way that could be more understood. So there have been quite a few little changes like that, but they tend to be doctrinally insignificant. And there have actually been LDS scholars that have gone through and sort of tried to figure out what that original manuscript was, because not a whole lot of exists, compared it to the printer's manuscript and the various things to kind of see how things, kind of mistakes made along the way, which is common when you have, you know, people involved in stuff. So I've actually been reading the results of that study, which is the closest we can get to the very earliest text that was written down. And as far as, apart from some misspellings and some updates on the grammar, it really is practically the same thing. But there have been, you know, quite a few little changes like that, just kind of improvements of, you know, the mistakes that get made as books get written and copied and printed.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's kind of a given with the manuscript. I mean, how many different versions of the Catholic Bible are there with different translations and typos and all that kind of stuff?
Right, yeah. So that is basically true. If you took the very first Book of Mormon from 1830 and compared it to one today, you would really see exactly the same thing, except for, you know, division up into chapter and verses and then footnotes and chapter headings and things like that. And you'd find little improvements along the way as far as misspellings or grammatical things. But the real message of it remains the same.
Excellent. So today we know kind of the LDS Church as being kind of centered in the Utah area. When did they make that migration from Joseph Smith in Western New York to Utah?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, because it did certainly start in New York, and it wasn't really a migration from there. It was sort of a gradual thing that from New York to Pennsylvania and then to on further into Ohio, Missouri. And the Mormons actually founded a city in Illinois called Nauvoo. It was right on the river as it went up there. It was a swamp. They drained it and built a beautiful city there. So they'd hoped to settle there, and that area would kind of be their place. But Joseph and his brother, who was kind of his very close associate in all this, were murdered in 1844. And the Mormons were basically driven out. In fact, a bit earlier, when they were living in Missouri, the governor of Missouri drafted legislation. It was called the Extermination Order, which said that if Mormons were enemies of the state, and if they were not removed, they were to be exterminated. So the reason that Mormons ended up in Utah was that they could find no safe place in the states where they had settled, in the United States. They even appealed to the U.S. government for help. And so they ended up in Utah because it was not part of the United States, and it was kind of a desolate place no one else wanted to be. And that's kind of why they ended up there.
Wow, that's a story that I don't think a lot of people know. I mean, to have a government issue an order of extermination is pretty serious.
It is, especially in a land where, you know, you're supposed to be guaranteed freedom of religion. But that is the reason. And the successor to Joseph Smith, a man named Brigham Young, led a few years later. They had to sort of leave the city of Nauvoo, and they went west. Basically walked and went in wagons and eventually hand carts that were pulled by people, you know, just they were the motor for them, you know, no livestock, to eventually make it out to the Salt Lake Valley. And that's where Brigham Young had the people stop and said, this is where we'll build our home. And it was pretty much just a desolate desert at the time, as they've done quite a lot with it. But that is why Mormons are in Utah. Of course, the majority of them aren't anymore, but that's kind of why they centered and settled in Utah for quite a while.
And I believe Brigham Young University is still there?
Yeah, it is there. Well, there are now three Brigham Young universities.
Oh.
There is one in Idaho. It's BYU, Idaho. There's one in Hawaii, which is a really beautiful place. And there's one that is in in Utah, in Provo, Utah. That's actually where I went to school and got my degree.
Oh, very nice. I think I want to go to school in Hawaii. That would be my pick.
But that's just... Yeah, it's actually a beautiful campus. It's a beautiful area, the BYU, Idaho, or BYU, Hawaii is.
Now, as a LSD member, or LDS member. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm sorry.
LSD, a little different.
Yeah, sorry about that. As an LDS member, at some point you do have to go on a mission as well. Can you explain what those are?
You don't have to. It's completely voluntary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'd be kind of hard, you know, to force people to doing that. I don't think you really get good results. So young men are encouraged to do that. It traditionally has been around the age of 19, the age was just lowered to 18. And so the young men are encouraged to do that. Young women are encouraged also to do that. But they used to leave at the age of 21. I think now that age has been recently lowered to the age of 19. But it's probably a little bit more encouraged for the young men of, than the young women. But they're encouraged to do so. They're encouraged to prepare and be ready and be worthy to do that. But they certainly aren't forced into doing it. And they're not paid to do it. It is something that, you know, we'd hope a number of people do. I did that at the age of 19, and I was called to serve a mission in Argentina. So I lived in Argentina for almost 2 years there as a missionary.
Wow. So during this time period, they're sent out to kind of spread the word and to preach kind of what your church is about?
Yes, and also to help the members that are there to provide service for them, to provide service for the communities around them, and just to kind of help out in as many ways as we can, be a force for good.
All right, I think we should encourage all teenagers to do that at some point.
Yeah, you know, there's Peace Corps, there are many opportunities to serve and help people, and especially just to find and experience a world beyond your own, another culture, another land, and just share what you have and hopefully appreciate what you have as well. I think too many people living in the U.S. might not appreciate the benefits we have here.
Yes, that's absolutely. I think that all kids at 18, that's what they should do. They should go find a mission. They should go someplace else and learn about the land and the people and, yeah, get a grip of what's outside of their little world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be nice.
How do we start that?
Yeah, let's find a way to encourage that for everyone. I think that would be a good thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So let's chat a little bit about kind of the Mormon or the LDS belief with the paranormal or the afterlife, things like that. Now, I know there are kind of, you come from a different place in that, you know, as far as I understand, you don't celebrate birthdays, correct?
That's incorrect.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll see. This is why we have you on, so you can teach me things.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, my younger daughter just turned 10 last month, and we were trying to decide what we're to do there. Her thing was she was wanting to go to Disneyland for her birthday, which my wife wants to make kind of a tradition in our family, but we weren't quite able to manage it this year. But my wife likes to sort of organize very ornate birthday parties with themes and all sorts of stuff and activities and having all those kids around wears her out, but there's nothing really right or wrong with celebrating a birthday. It's just, you know, whatever your local custom happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I wonder where
we'd also just celebrate just as a corollary, just whatever local customs are in our country. So Christmas, certainly Easter, New Year's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Halloween, Thanksgiving, you know, just whatever, you know, the culture happens to be.
Interesting. So I wonder where that came from, because I remember even as a kid, I was told that, you know, I mean, not that we, you know, kind of gossiped with other people, but I wonder where that kind of story came from then.
You got me. I do know there are some faiths and some Christian religions that do not celebrate birthdays or celebrate holidays because of perceived pagan origins for them, but we are not one of those groups.
All right, so somebody got their wires crossed somewhere back, and then it brings us to this.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
This is why we have you on.
That's why this is a great opportunity, you know.
Absolutely.
If there's anything that's mistaken, we can clear it up.
Absolutely. So let's bring that kind of around to the LDS belief in the afterlife. Do they mm-hmm. believe in ghosts and spirits, things like that?
Well, yes, we do. I mean, ghost is not a term that I like to use a lot because I think it has a lot of unnecessary connotation to it.
Absolutely.
But we certainly believe in spirits and in a world of the spirit and things of a spiritual nature. And so we actually have some pretty specific beliefs and some very specific scriptures dealing with this. And you could actually find a good bit about this in the Book of Mormon and other things as well. But we believe that all living things have a spirit. We believe that we, as mankind, as children of God, that we have spirits, and in fact, our spirits existed before our physical birth. So our existence does not start with our birth, but we actually are eternal beings. So our spirits existed before, and at birth they enter into our physical body, and death, the spirit separates from the physical body and keeps on existing in a world which we call the spirit world. And this is in a time before the resurrection of mankind. So we definitely believe that there are spirits, and we feel a very close connection with our ancestors and with those who have gone before. We believe that they are around us in a sense and can actually help us or be of some influence if needed.
Hmm. So not the traditional sense of haunting, as we have come to learn from Hollywood.
Right. I mean, our idea is that the haunting would not be a righteous spirit. That's not what they do. We do believe in evil spirits as well. And so there is a distinction to be made there. We also believe that every living thing has a spirit. So animals have spirits. Perhaps even all life, you know, lower forms of life have spirit as well.
Well, I mean, that kind of the way you explain that kind of sounds like the way a lot of people that I've heard talk about spirits, no matter what religion they've been, they believe that, you know, your spirit existed before, and your body is just kind of like the car that drives it around on Earth. And then when it is done with the car, the spirit kind of just goes back to where it's supposed to go. And then, you know, and then maybe go, I don't, does the spirit, how do I phrase this question?
I think I know what it might be.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, if do you have like a reincarnation and past lives kind of thing?
Great question. So the car analogy, I think, is pretty good one. Is a good one. Now, we do not believe in a reincarnation. We believe that there is one incarnation per individual. As far as past lives, wouldn't be a past mortal life, but for us, there is past existence before this, and so maybe there are glimpses of that. But we do believe in a physical resurrection, and so the resurrection would come upon all people, in fact, all living things who've been born upon this earth. Good or evil, doesn't matter. And that will be the spirit joined to get back together with the body in a perfect form to never die again. So we believe in a physical resurrection, as many Christians do. And we believe that this will eventually come to all people. But we don't believe in a reincarnation or in a time to sort of redo your mortality. We believe that this point in time between our birth and our death is a very crucial point in our eternal existence, and so that's why it is so important. Now, after this life, there will be many other things for us to do, and many things to accomplish, and many things to kind of gain after that. But we do just have one mortal incarnation.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Because I was just thinking, because I've heard so many mediums talk about that kind of thing, and that gets me to my next question. What about mediums and psychics and that kind of thing? I know sometimes that comes up in the Bible. Has that come up in anything in your faith?
Yeah, and the Bible tends to mention those things in kind of a negative light or negative connotation. And we would suggest or tend to avoid those types of things. Ouija boards or other types of trying to divine or contact the world beyond. One thing is, I think from our point of view, you're just perhaps not quite sure if you do contact something, what source would come through. We do believe that the spirit world can contact us, that messengers from God, who are actually angels, have contacted and continue to contact people when necessary, and that perhaps even our loved ones who have gone before can contact us or influence us. But it would seem to be more of a communication that is not initiated from our side, but just from the other side, if it kind of fits into God's plan.
So
that would be how we would look at that, I think.
Okay, so how would that translate into kind of think of your traditional haunted house situation, mm-hmm. where someone thinks that there's a spirit in their home, you know, banging mm-hmm. doors and rattling pots and things like that? How would that translate into that kind of situation? What would you think that would be?
Good question. Our view is that when death comes, that the spirit is ready to move on to the spirit world. And this is really a great question. I mean, since I've been a child, I've always been interested in things that are called paranormal and what these things might be. And I don't know that we know all of the answers. I think that if there were righteous spirits trying to contact us, it would not be in a way that would cause us to be nervous or frightened or anything. It would be a very calm and serene type of thing. As far as hauntings, I'm not really sure exactly what that is. I've had my own experience, which is kind of interesting, a long time ago. I'm actually from Pensacola, Florida, originally. And Florida, at least Pensacola, is supposed to have a lot of haunted house legends and stories and that type of stuff. And so I had an interesting experience as a child in an old house. And so I'm not quite sure what those things are. But as far as, you know, if there were a house that were truly haunted in the traditional sense, our idea is that that might be more of an evil presence.
Okay, so
there are things people describe that I don't know. I'm not sure that hauntings and what people think of are ghosts are actually the spirits of people that have died, but there might be certain things where sensations or actions or things that kind of repeat themselves and glimpses can be had into the world that is past or something. I don't know. I think there are still some things that we don't quite know, and that might be why ghost hunting shows and things of that nature are so popular right now.
Also, they're very dramatic and very entertaining.
Yeah, or at least the way they're edited and presented on TV, they are.
Exactly. So in kind of sticking with, you know, kind of how you're describing spirit and things like that, people have used a theory that sometimes haunting isn't a ghost of someone who passed, but it may be an ancestor, you know, kind of reaching out at a time when you need to hear from them. Would that be something mm-hmm. that would fit into kind of your belief?
That definitely would. And that to me sounds like something I wouldn't quite call a haunting. But our belief is that our ancestors especially would watch over us. And if we do have some need or some way they could help, they might be able to reach out to us and influence us or send us some type of message or some type of help that way. I mean, I've got stories from my family. Many people have stories from their family where someone has felt that someone who has passed on maybe just recently or even long before has somehow been able to touch them and let them know something. So our belief is that can certainly happen, and that the spirit does not sleep at death, that you are the same individual at death you were in life, and that personality, that essence continues. And so they may be beyond what we call beyond the veil, doing the work they need to do, but also watching upon us and hoping that we are doing things we need to do as well.
So it's fair to say that they could be reaching back, kind of, you know, that rattling of the door might just be them getting your attention that, you know, hey, don't make that choice.
Maybe, and how it might manifest for the individual, it could be very unique. But I would think it would tend to come in a way that would bring a sense of love and understanding, not something that would be seen as, you know, spooky or weird.
Okay.
That might be just a little bit of my own feeling there, though.
No, absolutely. And your opinion is just as valid as, you know, everyone else's. So I had another listener question come in, and they wanted to know, as a paranormal investigator, you know, you tend to deal with a lot of different cultures. Is there anything specific that they should look at when dealing with a member of the LDS church? Say they called them in to experience something going on in their house. Is there anything that they should do to address that specifically to make sure that it fits in with their belief?
Gosh, I haven't quite thought about that. just the idea that we actually believe that the spirit world is here upon this earth, that spirits don't travel far after their deaths. And so it's just kind of beyond our realm of being able to sense or understand it. So in many cases, loved ones could be near, but there also are dark forces. There is the adversary that is near as well. And so that we believe in a world of spirit and that our mortal life is just one tiny bit of an eternal existence before and after, and that there is perhaps a lot going on around us that we can't see, but that is, you know, influences for good and bad, you know, trying to turn us one way or the other. I think that, you know, there's also the belief that evil eventually will never win. That God has power over things, and that if one has faith in that, that can take him a long way.
All right. Well,
hopefully that answers the question.
I'm sure it definitely helps. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Thank you guys for the questions. Oh, we got a couple more listener questions that are coming in. This one came in over our Facebook page. And they want to say, what are your thoughts on cleansing? So we see a lot of people go in with burning sage and things like that, trying to push spirit out. What are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure that that's necessary. I mean, anything in a particular culture which brings you peace, you know, could be a good kind of thing. Now, one thing that is perhaps a bit different about us is that we have a lay clergy. So Mormon priesthood holders do not have that by, as a profession. They aren't ordained as a result of study or a seminary school or anything like that. But we believe that all worthy male members in a congregation should hold the priesthood and actually can perform ordinances. And so we have priesthood ordinances that we do ourselves. One would be the blessing of a home so that a spirit of peace is there. One would be the blessing of an individual for comfort, and that even, you know, evil spirits could be cast out by the power of the priesthood. So we believe that we have a priesthood authority from God that we can do those types of things. And so you might call that a type of cleansing. But that others, you know, different cultures might have different things. And I think, you know, one's faith and kind of how sincere they are about what they do might be a powerful part of that as well.
All right. So hopefully that answers your question. Thank you guys very much for the questions that are coming in. If you want, yeah, we've got some great questions coming in through the PowerX chat room, through Skype, and through our Facebook page. So hopefully we'll get to all of them. The next one that came in, they want to know, what are your thoughts on residual hauntings? So residual being a haunting that occurs kind of like a record player playing the same thing over and over again. It said, based on what you've been describing, it sounds like that doesn't quite fit into your religious belief.
Well, we don't have any specific doctrine about that. My personal feeling is I think that could be possible. Again, when I mentioned about certain places, there might be an event or a sensation or something that kind of gets caught there and plays over. And I had an experience in a very old house in a very old part of the town where I grew up in Florida that I think might have been something like that as well, where some event that happens, if conditions are right, replays itself. So you might hear something or see something from that has gone, you know, that has gone on before. I know many people have reported things that seem to be along this way, you know, images on Civil War battlefields and things like that. And so, I don't know, I would certainly say that that's possible. And I would say that many things of what people call hauntings might be just something like that. There's some type of I call it like an echo that just sort of repeats itself from time to time. So, yeah, like I said, we don't have any definite theology concerning that, but I consider it as possible. A lot of people have reported enough things like that where it could be taken seriously.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Hopefully, to that listener, hopefully that answers your question as well. Another question came in, this one through the Pyrex chat room, and they wanted to know, you mentioned the Ghost Hunters show, so you've obviously seen them before. When they use their technology to talk to the dead, or their little blinking lights and all that, who do you think that they're talking to?
Good question. Our point of view is that trying to talk to the dead in that type of sense, and of course there have been many ways where people have done that. You know, you have scrying, you have, you know, the throwing of bones, you have soothsayers. More modern things, of course, would be a Ouija board and then other devices that these places are using. And then, of course, there's what, the EVP and stuff?
Yes.
I don't know. I would just say that we're not sure, and that right there would give me cause for a bit of concern, and that I don't know that righteous spirits or the spirits of our ancestors would communicate with us that way. If they need to communicate with us, none of those devices or things would be necessary. They would be allowed to do it. So what those devices are measuring or getting through, I don't really know. Sometimes I doubt it's what people think they are. Of course, you have people that are on the complete other side that are very skeptical, very atheistic or agnostic, saying that that doesn't work at all, and these are just, you know, scientific devices measuring temperature or electromagnetic fields or whatever that aren't really designed to talk to spirits. But, I would just say, from my own view and kind of from the background of our beliefs, that probably not the person that you're hoping would be speaking through those things.
Okay, so I just had this thought. So I guess we're not going to be seeing the next reality show of Mormon ghost hunters anytime soon.
Well, you know, here's something interesting. And I did not know this for the longest time until I actually did a paranormal radio show a year or two ago. The original, the Ghost Hunter show, TAPS.
Yeah.
Right? The two founding guys, and I can't remember their names. There's the bald guy and the other guy.
Jason and Grant, yeah.
Okay. So which one is Jason the...
Jason is the bald guy. No, Jason is the bald guy. Grant's the shorter guy.
Yep. Here's the crazy thing. Grant is Mormon.
I actually did know that. Yeah.
Okay. And I did not know that, and I had seen the show several times until the host of a paranormal show I was on told me that. So we don't have anything against doing that type of stuff. I think it's an interesting thing. I've never done it myself, but I've always kind of thought it would be interesting to kind of go along and sort of see what happens. But I think it just kind of shows that there are things that happen in our world that we can't quite explain, that traditional kind of secular empirical view can't quite explain. And it's okay to look into and try to figure it out.
Well, that's good to hear, because there are some, you know, belief systems where they kind of just, nope, this is what we believe, and that's it. You know, that's the end. And I'm watching my producer sit here while you're talking. He's just nodding. He's agreeing with pretty much everything that you're saying. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
All right, so we have more questions. Lots of questions coming in. All right, I'm trying to sort through them. Stop. Okay. And it says... would ghosts consciously choose not to bother yourself or someone of the LDS faith and perhaps choose to haunt someone who might believe more in a haunting situation?
I don't know. And again, ghost is a term that I like to avoid using because it carries too many connotations.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. Our belief is that there are there is evil. There is an adversary of mankind, and there are evil spirits, and their job is to try to turn us away from the things that we should be doing. When it comes to ghosts and haunting, that type of stuff, I just kind of wonder what's going on. I've been a very kind of fan, very interested observer of things like near-death experiences. And I think most people probably don't want to die. And when death comes, they've got all kinds of stuff left undone or unsaid. But it seems to me, from what I recall, almost in all cases from near-death experiences, when people say they have left their body and they've gone to the other side, they don't want to come back. It's such a beautiful and a peace there. Even if they have family members that are going to miss them, if they have things undone left in their life, they feel such a beautiful peace where they are, they don't want to go back. And they're told, you know, you have to go back, it's not your time, you still have something to do, that type of thing. So what I wonder is that when the time does come, when we do cross that veil and we leave our bodies and death comes, if everything we hear from near-death experiences is true, then it seems like spirits would be ready to move on and ready for that, whatever that existence is going to be. And that the idea of haunting something or being stuck in the place of their mortal life or what they used to do that way wouldn't be as important to them anymore. Does that make any sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and so I'm just kind of going on by everything I seem to be learning from near-death experiences would sort of lead me towards that direction.
That's very interesting and a great way to look at it, too, not quite so head-on. We got another question that kind of steps away from the paranormal for a second, kind of jumps back to the belief system of the church, but can you explain the 3 degrees of heaven?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. 3 degrees of glory. Our belief is that salvation, and salvation through Jesus Christ, is not just like a yes-no thing, that there's more than just heaven or hell, that God has prepared for us on this earth eternal places based on what we're ready to receive. Jesus told his disciples, "In my Father's house there are many mansions." Paul the apostle wrote of a man who was caught up into the third heaven. And so we believe that there are 4 as kind of an eternal resting place or an eternal destiny or area for those people who've been on this earth, that there are 3 kingdoms or 3 degrees of glory based on what people have done in this life and what they really want. And so you've got 1 for people who are really wanting to follow God and to follow Jesus Christ's example and to really, you know, sacrifice and put aside their own cares for others. You've got 1 place for people that were good, decent people but didn't have time for that kind of thing. And you have 1 place for people that really were sort of more evil and didn't really care about others and were very selfish and lived only for themselves and didn't want to repent of their wrongdoings. So those are 3 degrees of glory, 3 kingdoms. Our belief is that even the very lowest one is so much more beautiful than what this earth is now, that it's kind of not even comparable. And then, of course, it just goes on beyond that. And that within those kingdoms, there are various levels or degrees. So there is a great number of final destinies, if you will, or final rewards that God has prepared for us, because people aren't all good or all bad. There are all kinds of shades in between. And that this just reflects what human nature really is.
So there's no traditional kind of fire and brimstone end of the world for some people. It's you know, you still get that glorious afterlife, but it's just kind of different versions.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really talk of hell as much. And so for us, it's not much of like a hell, fire and brimstone, devil with a pitchfork kind of thing. We believe that hell is kind of a person's own making, and that all people, good or evil, when they leave this life, when they die, they go to this world of spirits, and their position there, their state there, is kind of their own making. We sometimes think of it as being divided into a paradise and what we call a spirit prison, what others might call hell, And that's where people are kind of held back or restricted based on their own desires and their own lack of what they have done. But this hell will have an end, that it will eventually be done away with, and people will be saved from that through Jesus Christ. And in fact, people can, after this life, if they haven't learned what they needed to, if they haven't done, if they were completely lost, there is the opportunity to learn and to improve upon that. So for us, you know, it's not a fire and brimstone hell. It's more of a state of one's own being based on his own decisions. But that will eventually be done away with.
Okay. I had a question that when you're talking about that, the 3 degrees now I just went blank. But anyway, the Catholic Church has a whole special, I guess, department, quote unquote, for exorcisms and the evil and all that kind of stuff. Is that something that you would find in the Mormon faith?
What do you mean by department? You mean exorcists and people who specialize in that?
Yes, yes. Is that something? Because you said you do believe in evil and bad things and stuff. So I was curious if that's something that you'd find in your faith.
There's no position. There's no thing that would be similar to an exorcist, and there are no rites that would be for exorcism. In those cases in which someone might be plagued by an evil spirit, and this would be the spirit of someone who is an individual who has never been born upon this earth, that might be a good topic to cover what those are. But we would believe that would be something that could be handled through priesthood blessings and the faith and prayers of someone and of his leaders. But we don't have a particular exorcism or rite or anything like that.
Well, now that you kind of mentioned the spirits that are not quite of this earth, I mean, I know there are a lot of, there's the fairies, there's the, you know, all kinds of fun things all over cultures, all over the world. What kind of things would you experience in your faith?
Okay. Well, first of all, we don't really have any belief in what people might call demons. And, of course, when you say demon, there's this, you know, very horrific figure that comes to mind, you know, bat wings and claws and cloven hooves and tail, things like that. So we don't believe in demons. But to kind of give our view on this, we have to go back to before our physical birth and before this earth was created. We believe we all lived in the presence of God as spirit children of God. And there was one of those individuals whose name was Lucifer. And he rebelled against God's plan for us and set up himself in his own plan. Well, this eventually led to a battle or a war in this premortal heaven. And Lucifer and his followers were cast out. And so many Christians and even Jews and Muslims have the idea of Satan and the fall from heaven and that kind of thing. So we believe that this individual, Lucifer, becomes Satan. And Satan really just means the adversary. And so he is our adversary. And that he took with him one-third of all of these spirit children of our Heavenly Father. And so these spirits, beings, are actually like us. They truly are our spirit brothers, but they rejected God's plan. They rejected salvation through Jesus, and they were cast here upon this earth and will not be a part of salvation. One thing that they do not get is they will never be born into a physical body, as we are. And so that's a great gift for us. And so these spirit beings are the evil spirits that will be mentioned in the Bible. And we believe that their task here is to kind of be our opposition. And their opposition to God's plan, they're trying to destroy God's plan, they're trying to destroy us, they're trying to get us to deviate from the path that we should be taking. And so this is where evil comes from, that these spirit beings are all around us. And they have a full understanding of what went on before and of who we are, whereas we don't remember these things. And so they are around us constantly trying to incite people to do evil things or even to doubt or to lose faith in God or many, many things like that. So those for us, those are the evil spirits. And these are spirits that will never be born, never have a physical body. And they don't have any place in these three kingdoms of heaven that we spoke of.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, that actually matches up very similarly with many other, you know, cultures and religions that I've read. And unfortunately, we have come down to the last 3 minutes of our show. We've talked through this entire show. We even skipped our commercials. That's awesome. Real quick, if people want to find out more information about yourself, about where they can read up on all this kind of stuff, where can they do that?
Well, what's interesting is the stuff that I write about and study in my books and all that specifically has to do with Book of Mormon and archaeology and ancient history. If they're interested in that, they can go to ldsguide.blogspot.com. My books are called An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica and An LDS Guide to the Yucatan. And there they can contact me. They can email me. Are we still there?
Yep, still here.
Okay, sorry, my phone's beeping. They can contact me. They can email me and find information and download things I've written. But as far as the stuff I'm talking about with spirits and our beliefs like that, that's just general Mormon stuff.
All right. Well, I mean, we can always... Is the Book of Mormon available for other people to read if they wanted to? I think we might have lost them. All right. Well, guys, we're actually down to the end of the show anyways. That's all right. So we want to thank Daniel very much for his time, for being part of the show. And as always, I'm Rebecca.
I'm Kara.
And we'll see you in the shadows.